Well, sa chléir se be sin na si gé se le Kitty Corn ní gála ar tú sa bhéri. A tá scíal fád a len si Kitty tógu bhí déir sa chláán sa cí agus tógu mu a gúil na mocha si an teap a gan éit geantra dú an tú Devlin na. Isn't that true, Kitty?
Yeah.
It was called Devlin. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll start with that. Kitty, tell me about your youth growing up. You were brought up 10 of a in your family and things were hard, there must have been, you know, there trying to survive.
Well, we wouldn't be the worst of them. That's the seven before me that would have knew the worst of it, but I knew plenty of it too.
You did.
We had 7 miles to walk to the school.
What was the school called, Kitty?
Glasson.
Glasson, right. Would be under Creasley Parish. Yeah.
And we had 2 turf to carry with us. And I had a sister that was very weak, and we used to have to carry the 2 turf for her as well. And she used to sit down on the road and cry and say she was tired. And we would tell her to sit there because we weren't going to carry her, carry 2 turf as well. We would have to go back and pick her up then and run then with her. So we landed in the school maybe 30 minutes late, and we were given a few good cautions. And we never seen the fire that we carried the turf for. The teacher would be sitting up at the fire. But we were all the same. So
how many miles would it be to?
7 miles.
Seven miles. Right, that was a long walk in the morning.
A long walk. And we used to go an ear cut. But we weren't allowed because we would be going over a river. Mm-hmm. But it cut a good bit off our journey. So, but anyway, we were there and times were bad and you might have a slice of bread with no butter or jam or nothing else on it. And go out at play and have that bite and back in again and plenty of slaps and was no mercy on the stick at that time.
Were the teachers hard like that?
Oh, I had a Master McDonald and I never went home without blisters on my hands. And my mother went down, she was going to Creasley this day, and she saw my hands and she said, I'm going into him. So he eyed her coming through the glass window in the door and he says to me, he says, I didn't hit you yesterday. So that was for me to say the same when she would come in. So she appeared in anyway and she says, I'm coming on behalf of my daughter, Kitty. She used her yesterday with the ropes of the wonder. He says, did I hit you yesterday? I said, no. So my mother had to go and whenever she went, I got 10 more slaps in just because I had told at home. But that was the sort of life we had.
So he'd hit you with the rope, like that.
Aye,
hanging
the ropes. The ropes that you pull up the window.
I do. I know now. I understand now.
Either that or the belt of his trousers with the buckle.
My God.
Whoa, he was an animal.
Did he pick on certain families?
No, not at all. Everybody got the same. There was no difference in them. Just everybody was treated the same way. He had no likes or dislikes. He was an animal just, and he got away with it. But they were all animals at that time. But anyway, my time was short with him.
But you must have hated school, like, and you couldn't be blamed for it.
We all hated school, but at that time, if you didn't go to school, the guards come to the house, and you didn't want that. And, a lot of them left in the summertime then and went away to work. And then they'll come back and they'll go an odd day in the wintertime. And which the weather was terrible and we had a long distance to go and our days would be short in the winter time as well. But I left for good when I was 9 years of age. And my sister that's dead now, God rest her, brought me to this house. And all I had to do, but I was only 9 years, is herd the cows to keep them away from the corn. There was no fences or ditches or nothing at that time. And you're over and back with a stick with you. And it was a penance as nearly as bad as the school. And very little thought of you. So I spent the 6 months there. And I came home then and went an odd day to school again. And the next job I had then, I was opening the gate for Glenbey Castle. Another 6 months for £1 for the 6 months.
So it was very little money.
Very little money.
Yeah.
But the worst place of all that I went to, that I had to take home a stack of turf and a bag when I would be about, 9 or 10 years of age. And I was there and I wasn't even getting fed. And I was up in the bog this day, and I had a wee belief in God because we were brought up as good Catholics. And I went down my two knees in the bog and I asked God, if there's a God above, take me away from here. And I landed down, emptied my wee bag of turf, and the woman of the house came out and she says, there's somebody here for you, kid. So I went in and I was bogged from top to bottom. And my sister looked at me and she thought, well, starvation's a terrible thing. So they got a basin of water and they got me washed and left me middling for going home. So I went to Chrysler the next day, or myself and my sister, and bought a rig, clothes for me. And I went away then to a place they call Inch Island. And I spent 6 months there and came back and went back. Spent 3 years in all in Inch.
Was that much better though,
Kitty? It was a bit, but not that good either. You know, it was a bit better.
Yeah.
So my mother got sick then and I came home and I stayed a while at home and I worked on the council turf at 6 shillings a dark.
Was that near your home?
It was.
Yeah.
It was only just the same as from here to the town.
Yeah.
So myself and two of my brothers that's gone now too, worked at them and took in a lot of money. It was hard work. Could be up at 6 o'clock in the morning and there to 9 or 10 at night. And you had your couple of slices of bread with you and made your tea up in the bog and so on. But everybody was doing the same.
You were doing piecework though?
Piecework, aye.
And you'd do as much as you could do?
Oh, aye. The more you done, the more you got paid
for. Earned, yeah.
But that was that year then. And I decided then that I would pull out and go away again. And I headed to Letterkenny.
To the rabble,
and it was in November.
Did anyone go watch you, Kitty, or just?
No, I went on the train from Polcarra there, and I met a brother-in-law of mine out that was from Inch. I met him in Letterkenny at the square. So he said, I would have been asking maybe £10. He says to me, he said, what wages are you going to ask for? I says, I don't know. Well, he says, ask plenty. He says, easy coming down. I says, what should I ask? He says, ask £30. Oh, says, I'd never get that. And he says, well, times has changed, he says. So these two gentlemen came down the street and they saw me with a wee case with me and said, are you for hiring? I said, I am. So I said, what wages are you looking for? I says, £30. He says, can you milk? So I'm not saying the other word. So I said, I can. And he says, had you got anything to eat? And I said, no, since I left home. So he says, who's with you? And I says, this man here. He says, go you somewhere to McCarrie's Hotel. There'll be a dinner there for you. So we went over there and we had a lovely dinner, which I suppose I never had the like of it in my life before. So he says, well, I have a war was going on at the time, and they had took a hire a car from Strabane to Letterkenny. So he says, we'll be leaving here about 4 o'clock and he's to go to Strabane. And he says, so get the train from Strabane. They were from Antrim. So I never was on a train, except we went up here at the station. I never was on a big train in my life to that. We landed in Belfast and the war was going on and soldiers all over, and I said to myself, oh, I made a big mistake. I'm in trouble. Far away from home, nobody but myself. But they brought me on along to the car, where they had their own car there, and brought me to the house that I was working in. And as soon as I went in, I knew I was in a good house. It was a beautiful home, and there was a lovely lady nursing a child, and she shook hands with me and made the tea. And she said, I suppose you're tired. And I said, I am. But you couldn't tire me at that time. So she took me upstairs and showed me my room. And she says to me, "Are you a good riser?" I said, "I am." She says, "Well, we'll be calling you about 6 o'clock. She says, "We sleep next door." So I got the wrap at six. I never slept at all. So I got the wrap at six and down the stairs. She says, "I'll be with you the first morning and show you what you have to do." I say, "All right." So we set the two tables anyway for the breakfast, and the boss came down then. We headed for the byre to milk the cows. So he looked in where I was milking, and he saw that the milk was bouncing in the bucket. So he says, "Well, I'll believe you now," he says. "You can milk," he says. So we milked 30 cows anyway, and I had so much to take into the house for the whole day. So he went and put his into the cooler, and all come in for the breakfast. Well, I never had a fry in my life, and the plates were all on the rack, and everyone reached for their plate, and that was it. So we got a lovely breakfast, and then getting the dishes washed, and the whole routine of a house then. So.
So you did both housework and milking and...
All housework I had at that time, anything I'd done out, it would be just the milking in the morning and at night. But all housework, which learned me a terrible lot. It learned me to bake, and it learned me to make a dinner, and there was plenty there. Monday was wash day, Tuesday was for the rooms, they had a day for everything. But the pleasure that was in it, it was great altogether. So I wrote home anyway, and I told my mother that I was the same as if I was in a hotel. I never wanted to leave it. And I spent 3 years there then. And I left. I asked for Patrick's Day off, and I came home here, and we had it made up that I was going to get married. So I didn't like to let them down, they were that good to me. But I wrote a letter to them, and I said, "As you know, I was a very bad scholar." And she to write the envelopes for me to post to me, what was my boyfriend at that time. So I says in the letter, I says, "I'm terrible sorry," I says, "I'm getting married." I said, "To the own man that you used to write the envelopes for." So I got a lovely letter back. And a photo of the three kids, and "So sorry." And she says, "If I saw your husband," she says, "I'd pull his ears as long as a donkey." She says, because she says, "We'll never get you replaced." So I never was back in that place, which I would love to go back, but they're all dead now. Anyway, the family might be living.
But they treated you like one of their own.
Well, I was good too, do you see? But. My home was, when I came home for the week's holidays, I couldn't get away back quick enough. But the work was heavy. But I done more than I had to do. I took a man's place in the byre where he had no man at the time. I took his place, cleaning out the byres and everything, up till he got a man. But it was no bother to me. So, that was it then. So I got married then, and I came to live in Fulcarra, and I'm here now, I suppose, the most of 65 years. I got married when I was 21.
So your husband came into the old home to live here?
Aye, he was all the time in Scotland.
All
right. So he came home on St. Patrick's Day, or a couple of days before Patrick's Day, and then we got married on the 2nd of April. And I came down here a week after I got married, and I'm down here since. And I suppose that's where I'll finish up.
But what did he live in the old home on the farm here?
Just across the street there, just.
So you then built this new house.
We built this. But that house is 100 years old now, and it was built for £20. £20 it cost to close it. But there were no plastering or nothing done inside. But that's when I come in. There's just the stones. It was all built with stones. So there was no plastering or nothing done there. And I had no money, and he had very little. So we gathered away and got it house fixed up over there, and bit by bit until we got gathered, and we are where we are now.
But this house then, you tell me about that, you helped
it
up
with. We turned round then, and we saved for 20 years for to get as much money as to build this house here. Because we had no toilets or no nothing over in the old house, and the students were starting to come to Fulcara at that time. And I was always a person for to try to better myself. And I said if we had a house up and toilets in it, and we could start to take in the students. So we had £700 in the bank at that time. It was the post office at that time. So we looked about planning permission then, and unless you had good Irish, you wouldn't get the grant. So I managed to do as much as I could for the Irish too, and I got the grant. And you see the size of this house here now. My husband worked, and I looked after the man that built. And every block that's in this house here, I put them up and mixed the concrete as well, and did the cooking as well in between. And up on scaffolds, and there's a man from Annagry that was looking after the houses at that time. And we were at the square of the house, and he landed, and he said, you'll soon be ready for the roof. And the man was building says, I will. So he said, well, if I get a bit of paper, he says, I'll mark out the roof for you. Ah, no, says your man, he said, I'll mark out the roof myself, he says, because he said, we're in a very stormy place here, and we'll need to put in good timber, strong timber. And he says, you'll only be putting in the grand timber. So he says, get me a bit of paper, he says to me. So I went into the house, and he's, while I was in the house getting the writing pad, he says to the man, he says, an Irish, he said to him, he says, who's labouring to you? He said, she is. So there was a scaffold at the square at that time, and I was putting the blocks up to the scaffold. And then when it come that it was too high, I went up on the ladder with the block under my arm.
My God.
That's as sure as I'm sitting here today. And anyone on this road will tell you the same. Every block that went up here, I put them up. And I stood on the scaffold with your man that was doing it and held the timber while he was nailing it. And there's not, my husband didn't as much as have to mix a batch of cement. But he was working and taking in the money. And that was helping to pay your man. So between selling an odd cow or calf or something, we were able to keep going. And we got the house built. And I hadn't as much as a penny of debt on me when the house was finished. And as soon as the house was finished, we came into it on the last, on the fair day of Fulcara, Thursday, the fair day of Fulcara, the last Thursday, April. And I had the students in here on the first Wednesday in July. So my husband went away to Scotland for to gather up the money. I had £15 in the bank when we were finished with the house. And he took down 4 head of cattle to the fair, that fair day that we were in here. And he would only get £15 apiece for the cattle. So he took them home. He sold one for to give him as much money as would take him away. So we left the other 3 here, and he went away. And the head teacher came round, which was Eddie McGee. And he says to me, he says, will you take in the students? Says I will. He says, you know, he says, you must talk all Irish. I said, that'll be no bother to me. So he said, Father, you have good Irish or bad Irish? He says, there's no English. Says I, that's all right. He says, how many could you keep? Well, I said, I'll leave the house to you now, I said. So we had 4 bedrooms at this time, and he went through and he measured the house for 30 students. And after he went away, my daughter was here, Nora. After he went away, myself and my daughter came out here, and we started to figure out how would we seat them all. how would we close the beds? And we couldn't come up with an answer. So I headed off to the bog the next day to try to save all my turf before they would come. And when I came home from the bog, my daughter says to me, Eddie McGee was in here. He got more houses. You'll have in 12. And I says, I thanks be to God. I had already wrote a letter to Mickey in Scotland to tell him that I was getting 30 students and that I didn't know how I was going to seat them or how I was going to close the beds. So I got a letter home from him, although the thing was changed. I got a letter home from him for only to take 5 because it was going to be too much work for me to have students and doing the farm as well. But I ignored his letter and I took in 12. And the same year, Master Geller, God rest him, was from Dunluce, and he was a great friend of mine. And he gave me 4 teachers. And I had the 4 teachers and the 12 students for July. And the teachers were staying a month. And all the money I made on the teachers fed the students for me for the whole 6 weeks. And I was able to put money into the bank. So my husband came home anyway, and he said to me, how are you fixed for money? I says, I'm not too good. And he was as bad a scholar as what I was myself. So I showed him the bank book. And he says to me, what had you to draw that money out of the bank for? I says, what are you talking about? He says, what is that £40? I says, look at the bottom of it. I says, that was £40 I put in. Jesus, he says, you're a good one. So, but anyway, that was my life with the students and the home. And
you kept students then for years?
I kept students for 25 years.
Yeah.
And only I broke my arm. I was preparing for this year, like that year, and I was out painted and I stood on a barrel and the barrel went with me and I broke my arm.
Broke your arm.
And I said, no, that's me. I had to throw in the towel.
You had done enough, sure.
I had done enough.
Anyway, Kitty, we'll go back to your youth again and the home you were brought up in. Like,
yeah.
Your father, what kind of work did he do, Kitty?
Well, he did a bit on the land and he would take work with the council if he got it. And he reared 10 of our family and I don't know how he done it. Because the family wasn't that good. They would go away and they would hardly write home. They used to drink a bit and come home and have a good time and never thought on the home they left. But my father survived it and he was a great father and my mother was a great mother and they had everything on the land that they wanted. And if they were short of money, they sold a beast. And if they were short of a bite to eat, they killed a sheep. And there was no fridges or nothing at that time. And you hung the sheep out in the wire and you put a sheet or a something over the top of the sheep hanging from the roof. And my father would go out in the morning with his knife and he would cut a leg and take it in and she would dress it and have a beautiful dinner. And that went on till that was finished and if you had a few pounds to buy something else it was all right and if not, kill another sheep. And he kept us all going like that and fed us the best we could, but we were able to go away to work. And
did he get any dole?
A shilling or a dole, and he had to walk to Fulcara for it. But if he wasn't on the dole, it was hardly worth his while to do it, but if he wasn't on the dole, he wouldn't get any work. He wouldn't be carded out. So he walked to Fulcara for the shilling or a dole. Even though we were out behind Mockish, our parish was Fulcara, and we had to come to Fulcara to sign. So we often talked about him coming to Fulcara and going to the stalls and buying a couple of old coats on the stalls and taking them home. And he might have a few pennies left out of the shilling, taking them home, and she would wash them and sort them and make suits for the boys and dresses for the girls. school bags for the school and so on. And we were dressed as good as anybody was according to what we had. So that was our home.
He'd go off to Scotland then at times?
I never remembered him going to Scotland in my day. But he often told us the story about going to Scotland and walking from Bachymachish right on out, going to Derry. And I told you yesterday about going into the chapel.
Tell me that story again.
So himself and another man, the two of them headed off, heading for Scotland, leaving goodbye with his wife and his family to earn very little but to keep going. So the day came on very bad and they had no money for digs or nothing, so they went into the chapel and cathedral and let the kenny they say yet. And they had the shelter and they had the heat. So at 12 o'clock the lights came on, whether it was candles or what now I do not know. And a priest came to the altar. And he looks down and he says, "Is there anyone here?" He says, "Could serve Mass?" And nobody spoke. So when there was no answer, he went away. So they thought it was very rare, but there was no congregation there either, only the two of them. So that was all right. The next morning, they decided they would meet the priest and tell him. So the priest says, "Where are you going?" He says, "We're going to Scotland." He says, "Would you stay one more night?" He says, "And we'll go to the chapel," he says, 12 o'clock. So he says, "We'll give you a bite to eat and give you a couple of bob." Oh, they were all delighted and stayed. So the two men and the priest was in the chapel that night. And the same thing happened 12 o'clock. The priest came on the altar. And he spoke down and he says, "Is there anybody here?" He says, "Can say Mass, serve Mass." So the priest walks up and served the Mass for him. So when the Mass was over, he says, "Thank God," he says. He says, "I'm free now." So he says, the priest said to my father and the other man, he says, "That was a soul," he says, "that might have been there for..." He says, "Look at the turn yous have done," he says. "That man's at rest now. Some Mass that he hadn't offered, he had to do." So the two boys headed off to Glasgow and a couple of bob in their pocket. And it would be tough times in Glasgow, or Scotland at that time too.
So they saw a ghost, they saw a ghost, that priest was a ghost.
It was a ghost, it was a ghost. But they say that at that time, you know, maybe the things is not now, but they were saying at that time that if you give money to a priest for the saints of Mass and he was called away before he had said that Mass, that he had to come back to say the Mass. But there's not much word of them things now.
Oh, not at all. You have other ghost stories there as well, Kitty. You had a few more ghost stories for me yesterday.
But... about the haunted house.
Aye.
I don't remember it, but I know where the house is. It was only told to me when I came down here that this house just outside Fulcarra there, and the priest was saying Mass in Fulcarra Chapel, and he got word that to come to this house. These people had taken the house, the everything was moving in the house. And they didn't know what to do, and they sent for the priest, and the priest came, and he turned round, and it was the devil that was in the house. So he prayed, and he prayed, and he prayed, and he says, "All the fire I can put him is across the road." And the sweat was pouring off him, but he cleared the house anyway. But at that time, there were several ghost stories, you know. And many's the time we wondered where we told them to make us afraid ourselves.
Ah, no, but your brother had a scare as well.
My brother, that time I was going with a lady married from Lochiel, and coming down the steps of an old barn, four men carrying a coffin, and the two of them panicked, and they wouldn't let him come home that night. And he stayed there and he headed off at, because the ones at home would be worrying about him too, and he headed off at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And he came in and he told my mother and father. So my mother says, you have to go down and tell the priest. So he came down to Polcarra and he told the priest. So he had money with him for to get a mass read. And in 9 days after that, we got a telegram to say that my brother, well, he wasn't killed out, but he died anyway. So that was the sign that my brother got that night. But that was him there.
Yeah. You have stories too about the fairies, Kitty. You heard?
Oh
that,
yes, to my brother-in-law. One day he was up in the bog, and he was a very, very particular man. And there come a big shower on, and this place was called the Fairy Glen. And he went away on shelter, and God, he saw this lovely tree. And he says to himself, that would look lovely down at our front door. So he dug out the tree, and he went back over to the bog, and he took over the spade, and he dug out the tree. And he come home very proud, and sorted out the place for the tree. And that next morning he got up, the best animal in the byre was dead, his horse. Well, he never was sick or never nothing wrong with him. So somebody told him, he says, well, he said, if you lift at that tree, he says, from the Fairy Glen, he says, everything about the house will go. So he says, my advice to you, he says, go back and leave the tree where you got it. So he says, that was the end of the trouble in my street. But it was a true saying that time, no matter what you touched belonging to them, they would have it back in some other way.
There were certain areas as well,
certain areas. So I told you the story about my sister going home on the bicycle.
Yeah, well, tell it again.
My other sister was having a baby that night, and she stayed till it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, till everything was over. And she headed out Muckish. And just going up, we used to call the Dipper. Going up there, you had to walk a bit. And this big shiny dog was an extra size, came running alongside her. So when she was a bit frightened, but not that much. So she got on the bicycle again, no matter how hard she went, the dog went as hard. And she come to a place that we used to call the Big Wall, out behind Muckish. And there was 2 miles of a hill in it, and all you done was hold the brakes. And no matter how hard she went down the hill, at this time she had the beads on her hand. She was getting frightened at this time. And the dog followed her, and she took the turn to come over to her home. And she had to cross a river. And as soon as the seems whatever was has to do with the ghost, it seems they can't cross the river. So just as she was crossing the river, the dog went away in a ball of fire. And that's the time she got frightened then. She had only about 3 minutes or walk to our door then. And our door was never locked. There was a turf at the back door, and you pushed in the door, but she fell in. So my mother found the noise, and got up and had to sprinkle her with holy water and everything to bring her round. And it took a couple of hours for her to be able to tell what happened. And that was it, but that was all. So I've told you about my brother then, coming from Creasley.
Yeah, well, say it again.
So my brother was coming home from a dance at Creasley this night, and he saw a bicycle in front of him, the red taillight. And he says he couldn't know who was down the road, because there was no houses hardly at that time, and he knew everyone that would be down, they would be up along with him if they were there. So he says, this bicycle, no matter how hard he pedalled, the man in front of him was going quicker. So he says, well, my God, he says, I don't know who you are. So when he came to the crossroads, he headed for, say, if he was heading for Falkara, and my brother's way would have turned down. So he says, I'll find out. He says, you'll not be able to cycle when you go to the bottom of the hill, and I'll find out who are you. So he turned and he headed up the road after him. And he turned into a gravel pit just below Baird's. And Paddy turned round and he went in after him. Paddy never told us what he'd seen. But he said he put his hand up and he had a lovely head of curls, which he still has there. And his hair was like a board.
Stood on his head just.
He put his hand up on his head, whatever he saw. He never told us, I never heard what he seen. But when he came home, the words my father says, well, he said, you done wrong, he said. He says, when that was leaving you, he says, you should have let it go. He says, it wasn't interfering with you, and you should have went your own way. So.
Yeah, he made the mistake of following
him.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't come back. So that was it.
Yeah. Do you believe in fairies, Kitty?
Do I believe in ghosts? Mm. I used to when I was wee, but whenever we were young, we had a sister married in Dunmore, and we used to go out that muckish road there, 7 miles a walk. And all we ever worried about is there used to be a thing they called the Fargarta.
Mm.
And my sister used to always tell us to take a slice of bread mm-hmm. with us in our pocket. And I never saw a ghost or I never want to see one, but I often heard of them.
Well, but you know the Fargarta that you're saying there, you get a weakness, with hunger just would hit you.
Yeah.
Has that happened to you, Kitty, in the
past? It did once, but I don't know. It didn't do me any harm. But I was hardly fit to go up the brae just at, you know, there, as you go out muckish there, and there's a wee hill in it. And my brother was with me. And as I said, I'm taking the Fargarta. We didn't know what it was, but. So he says, take a bite of bread,
mm-hmm.
and it went away. But see? They say if you hadn't something to eat that time...
Yeah, you would just drop.
You would drop it.
Would.
I don't know what was causing it, but that was only one time. And maybe it was a tiredness for the whole walk, maybe it was doing it too.
But your knees would get like jelly.
Like jelly.
Yeah.
And you were just going to fall. But my sister would never let us go away. We used to be down here at the dances. And we would go in, we'd only push in the door. She would be in bed in the kitchen. And she maybe the last bit of bread she would have, she would tell us to take it with us. In case we would get to Fargarta, it was a long journey. I remembered my brother heading off this time anyway, and I wasn't going out with him that night. So he sat behind a thirst deck for to have a smoke. And it was the councilmen wakened him in the morning.
He fell asleep
out yeah. He wasn't a bit afraid.
Oh, he wasn't lonely in any
way. Oh, not at all. Well, you see, we were that used to it because when my sister was married and doing more, we had, it was great for us.
Yeah.
We could come down there and get a bite to eat and over to go at the Hark to the dance or somewhere like that. When we were in Creaslet, when we were out behind Muckish, if we headed to Creaslet to the dance, we had to walk there and you got nothing to eat to even.
How many miles would it be then out to Creaslet?
Well, when we were living out at home, it was 7 miles to Four Chapels, 7 miles to Termin, 7 miles to Doe Chapel, 7 miles to Fulcarra, and 7 miles to Dunluce. And that was from, you know where the signpost is there?
I do, yeah.
Out there before you turn over.
So who would be your nearest neighbour? You lived in the wilderness, Kitty? Like
The Sweeneys, just as you turned in to go to our house, the Sweeneys, they're all gone now. That was our closest neighbour. But there were neighbours at that time. You know, one never left the other.
But then how far would you go? Like, there would be a long distance between the next house and...
Aye, well, when we left to come to Fulcarra, I'm sure we travelled 6 miles before we came to the house then. But we were that used to it. We used to see the lighthouse. And we used to say, well, we're near Fulcarra. And we'd only be halfway at that time.
My God.
That was all.
Describe the house you lived in, Kitty. There would be so, you know, it was small enough, though.
It was small. There was only the two rooms in it. Just the room and kitchen. A thatched roof. And there was three beds in the room and two in the kitchen. And there were three lying at the bottom of the bed and three lying at the top. And my father would get, before he'd go to bed, he would come down and put the holy water and all us in the bed. And maybe the bigger ones would be, you know, be in the, what we used to call the room. The smaller ones would be in the kitchen where my father and mother were sleeping. So there was one night anyway, whoever's in the bed with me anyway, 4 or 5 hours anyway, he was coughing. And my father turned round and he said he always had a great belief in a wee taste of whisky. So he got a teaspoon anyway and he gave my brother a wee drink of whisky and we started to cough too soon.
He wanted to taste it.
So we wanted some too, but we pretended we were coughing all the time then because we thought it was that good. But we had a great father and mother.
You did, and you were happy.
Well, we were happy. Yeah. There was a big fire on, a full creel of turf on the fire, and a big, big long stool there, and we were all sitting there.
In a nice, cosy house.
We had a nice, cosy house. My mother was a great housekeeper, and my father was a great husband and a great father. He wouldn't let her carry a bucket of water to the house, not if the house was falling on him. He would wash the potatoes in the morning and he would leave them at the dresser and he would leave the bucket of water beside it, so she left on the pot of potatoes and put the water onto the pot then. But he left everything handy for her. Oh, he was a great man. Never in my life did ever I hear the two of them argue.
No, they wouldn't do that.
Never did I hear a cross word between them.
They had a routine of work. System worked.
She was great and he was great. And we used to have dances out there.
Did you?
Oh, aye. There used to be 14 bicycles would come from Polcara and they used to count all the lights coming down at the big wall. And there were tea made for everybody.
So how often in a week or a...
Just on a Sunday night.
Oh, every Sunday night?
Nearly every Sunday night.
So who played the music, Kitty?
Oh, just anybody that was able to play. Yeah. Nearly all our ones was able to play.
Were they?
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Play the box or played?
I play the two spoons.
Yeah.
Well, they played that and they had a melodeon. Maybe they got the land off of somebody. And they played that. And then there used to be another man from away down near Glasson School and he used to come there for the Sunday night, and he used to have a melodeon with him. But
was he doing?
He was doing this, right?
Yeah.
I bet you know yeah. That all you about him.
No, but I met that man.
Did you meet him?
I did, yeah.
Well, he was married to a cousin of mine, Paddy Doohan.
That's the man. He was very musical.
Oh, Jesus, he was great.
So you'd have your own crack. You had a great crack.
Well, we had the best of times. We had the best of times. And many's the time I was saying, you could come into my house now and the day there would be no bread in it. And this is 08. And in my mother and father's time, there would be 8 or 9 scones made in the morning. And on the night that we were going to have a dance, everyone was taken to the room. And there were raisins in the bread at that time. And many a time I wondered, how did she do it? And my father would be in the kitchen, he'd be putting everyone down to the room for their tea, and the rest would be dancing. When you sat down, you went to the room for your tea. It was the greatest cheery house.
It was, you know.
It was.
And would you pay admission going into this?
Not at all.
No, just crack.
All crack. And the more nails was in the boots, the better. The more rattle you made.
Did you have a flag floor?
Flag floor.
Ah, brilliant.
Aye. The more nails was in it, the more noise you made.
Were like horses going round the room?
Well, God save us, they could dance.
And what kind of, would that be old Irish dances?
Old Irish dancing. And my mother was a great singer. And my father would sit and watch. I never seen my father dancing now. But my mother did. And my father would be sitting there laughing and enjoying every minute of it.
That was brilliant.
It was great altogether. Yeah. And I mean, I would only see the end of it. I was the third youngest in the house. There were seven above me. I must show you a photo of the whole family.
You will do. I will see that before I leave. But describe to me how Christmas would be.
Greatest day of our life. There would, at that time, my mother would have turkeys and hens. Well, she had that all her life, all the time. Mm-hmm. But she would have two or three turkeys, and she would have them stuffed. And she used to make broth. And she'd have nettles and everything in the soup, and it was as good as a dinner.
She'd be good then on the old herbs thing.
She was all on that.
She knew all that stuff.
Well, do you know this? I never took soup like what I got from my mother. It was like a dinner. And he had the head of the table all the time, and my mother never sat at the table.
Did she not?
Never sat at the table. She sat over in the corner with her bowl of soup and her potatoes. And as the bigger ones were at the table, the rest of them were sitting round the flag floor. Oh, I tell you, there were no knives and forks there. The big spoon was all you had.
Was that it?
That was enough.
That's the way.
That was enough. But Christmas was a great... And, we used to get presents and all, and we used to send presents away. Because I remembered
did
me.
Did you?
Yeah. I remembered my mother parceling, sending chickens over to Glasgow to the family that would be over. And she'd be giving chickens to neighbours and having them cooked and everything. We would be way around that Christmas day and giving a present to this one and a present to the other one. And we'd be getting a wee present back.
Not what would you get for Christmas, Kitty?
Like as Santa.
Or aye.
And I'll tell you what we got from Santa. We used to hang up our socks at the fire, and be a sweet, and a wee slice of cheese, a wee slice of cake, and a penny. And my father used to play a joke on us. He used to get a wee bit of cow manure and roll it up, a wee parcel, and we would open the parcel, and that was what was in the parcel. But he did this as a joke.
I know.
But on Christmas Eve, we had an old uncle who used to come down to visit us. We had two uncles, actually. But one of them used to play cards, and the other fellow didn't. So my mother would make the tea anyway, and she used to have a scone on the fire nearly all the time. So It was made up among them, but we didn't know. It's Santa. My mother would have the scone on the fire for the job, do you see? So my uncle started throwing pennies in on the top of the scone. Santa was throwing them down the chimney. We were believing all this.
I know.
And the door would be closed. We weren't allowed to go out in case we put them away. There'd be no more pennies. My uncle was throwing the pennies onto the scone, and that was a way to bed as quick as you could, but Santa was around. So that was the Santa we would have. I remember that night that my brother landed home from midnight mass, and he came down, put his head in to four or five of us in the one bed, and he says, "Put down the heads, Santa's coming down the road after me." Oh Jesus, we put down the heads, and we were feared to take them up. And the things would be at the fire for us. So we were feared to come out. We were feared to lift the clothes off our eyes in case we'd see him. We were feared for him. But we, for whatever time, my father, God rest him, would say, "Well, that's him away now." Oh, the noise got up out of the bed and out to the fire, and that's, we enjoyed that wee slice of cake. But I went away, my cousin turned round and was up in our house. And she used to be lonely going home. So my mother says, "Kitty will go down with you." So she come from a place called Glack. You don't know where it is?
No, I don't.
It's beside Glaston School.
Right.
But she would be a cousin of mine, but she would be a lot older than what I was. So I went down along with her. She was smoking the whole way down, and we landed. But they never thought on Santa. So I was getting ready to go to bed. I hung up my socks and opened the top of them, thinking Santa knew to come. So I got up in the morning anyway, and most of them was all the way to Mass. So I went and felt the bottom of my sock, nothing in it, and started to cry. So my old auntie said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Santa never come to me." So, they were in an awful way altogether. So when the rest come home from Mass, the old auntie says, "Did you any of you see Santa?" "Oh, sure, Santa was here last night." "Oh, sure, but he never come to Kitty." "Well, did you not leave a note to tell that Kitty was here?" "Oh, I'll leave out a note and tell him there'll be other ones that he didn't know about either, and he'll come back to them." So there was, my sock was full the next night.
Always well that ends well.
Aye, that was it. Mm.
Kitty, in your neighbourhood as well, I talked about yesterday about a house out there that known locally in my area as Chaffodin Tlashy.
Uh-huh. That was our Cayley house.
Yeah, I've listened all my life, in my youth especially, to, you know, stories about, you know, my grandfather and mm-hmm. grandparents going out there walking to Derry to get the Derry boat. Mm-hmm. And that was your first stop. And they'd have a break there and have... Mm-hmm.
At that time there might have been a pub there, but that would be long before my day.
Mm-hmm. But there was a pub there, definitely.
And even in my day now, while I was growing up, there was never a car. There wouldn't be many cars on the road, but neither a car or a van or anything ever passed that house but they stopped. But there were no tea or nothing at that time. They just mm-hmm. stopped because it was a halfway house for everybody. And
they were called McDade's, though?
McDade's, aye. Right. Paddy and Jimmy was there in my time. And the two of them died. The two of them were buried the one day.
Were they?
Aye, the Paddy was... Jimmy was sick, and he was very ill. I was married at that time now. And he was very ill, and they had the doctor. And the doctor came, and I said there was nothing he could do. So... they were only had the one bed. So the two of them, my father, God rest him, and a couple of my brothers used to be over and back to it, keeping an eye on them. So my Paddy never did anything in the house. It was always Jimmy that did the baking and the cooking and everything. So Paddy maintained that if Jimmy died, that he would die too. So Jimmy died in at the back of Paddy in the bed. And my father and mother landed over and asked how he was and looked over, and Jimmy was dead, Paddy lying beside him. So they got the priest anyway, and he did his job anyway, and they arranged a wake. And Paddy was still lying in the bed with Jimmy dead in the bed. There wouldn't be many at the wake at that time, but whatever was at the wake, my mother that made the tea and everything took it over to the house. And so the day of the funeral, they were heading down, you know where the crossroads is?
Right, yeah.
You're picking up to head for Creasley. Somebody followed them and told them that Paddy was dead. So they didn't know whether they should come back with the coffin then or go ahead. So they said it was unlucky to go back. So they went ahead with Jimmy down till Creasley, Doe Cemetery there, and buried Jimmy, come back then, and another week then, and buried Paddy the next day then. And it was the councilmen that used to go in there to play cards on a wet day. They all gathered up and put a tombstone on the McDades, and they're buried down at Doe Chapel. But that's the thought they had for the two of them. But Paddy did say that he couldn't live without Jimmy.
So he went the same day?
He went the same day.
God.
Wasn't it sad? The dead man lying at the back of him in the bed.
So that was in a historical house, Kitty. Eh? That was a very historical house, like with the, you know, it had a pub once. And
that would be long before my day.
It would.
All I remember of them is the two of them there together, and Jimmy used to do the odd jobs about Glenveagh.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say, that's my paymaster. He'd be getting a letter every month, so there's the few bob what he was getting. But he would be called maybe to meetings, and then he would be maybe to be 10 or 11 o'clock, but they were walking everywhere. So the day that Jimmy was heading to the Glenveagh, someone else had to go over. Paddy would shout, "Hi, Dennis." So no one of them wins over to keep me in company till Jimmy comes back.
He didn't like being on his own.
He couldn't stay on his own.
No.
It's some fear.
And what about them being so far away, like miles away from everything?
Mm.
What was your nearest shop, Kitty? Like
Chrysler. Or Falcara.
Right.
But
you wouldn't need a lot though, but you
No, sure, it was a bread. The van come round to the house.
Did it?
A horse and a wee van.
Mm.
And you got your tea and sugar, and you'd be very lucky to get a loaf. And the van man used to get his tea in our house, and he would take in a quarter of tea and a half a pound of sugar and a loaf. That was the pay for the tea. And we couldn't wait to get him away till we would get a slice of the loaf, because we were always used to the scone bread.
Your homemade bread.
But all the days of my life I remembered him coming in. He tied up the horse on our street and come in and had the tea, and my mother put on a couple of eggs for him, and that's how he paid for the tea. He took in the quarter of tea and the sugar and the loaf.
And were you burning the oil lamps then?
Oil?
Yeah.
We never knew what oil
was. No, but like your oil telly lamp?
No, yeah. I never had a telly lamp until I got married.
Right.
We had just the wee, we had a single burner oil lamp.
Mm-hmm.
That was the light. And do you know this? I don't know how my mother's seen to sew or anything. And spinning there, and that wee dull light. And my father read the paper and sitting down below the lamp there.
My God. She did a lot of spinning, your mother, though.
Oh, my mother made jumpers for the whole family. And I even made nighties and everything for them out of flour bags. She made the sheets out of flour bags.
Did she?
She would. She used to get washing soda, and she would take the names out of them. I used to hear my sister then when they would be married and come home, and there was a brand of flour out that time, White Heather. we had a great home, you know, when they would all come home, and we'd be sitting round the fire telling the stories about when we were wee, you know, and we would be wee at this time too, but we'd be listening. So some of my sisters would be saying, well, they would be old at this time. Sisters would be saying, well, many's the time we think on lying on the white heather. some of the white heather wouldn't be, you know, the bran wouldn't be taken off it with the washing soda. But she done all. She did everything. I made the pillow covers and everything.
She was some mother.
A 10-stone bag of flour every week. That's what came into our house. My father went with the horse and cart down to Chrysler, and he bought engine meal and oatmeal and a bag of flour, and that was every Monday. And that was finished the following Monday. And that was all cooked in our house. And all on the crook. It ended up that my mother got an oven then, you know, with the lid. Just a pot, just like we called it the oven. And she used to put coals on the top of the, and she took out the loveliest scones. You wouldn't get the like of them.
No, you wouldn't.
No.
Did your father smoke a pipe?
He did.
Yeah.
A couple of ounces of tobacco every week. Mm-hmm. And if he run out, he done without. We used to be down in the room, we'd be put down to the room when my mother would be busy and my father would be reading the paper. And we'd be put down to the room out of the, you know, to keep the noise away. And we used to roll up papers and smoke papers down in down in the room. We always had a fire in the room too. So many's the time I think, well, there were very little I ever once smoked. But my mother would smell the brown paper then, and she would come down. We used to be the fear of our life for coming down, and we'd batter out the paper. That was the pastime we had.
You know, I often went out that road now, the Mountain Muckish Road, and do you know, as you go out by past Errigill, going up Dunluey way, way over to the left, where there's a lake called Loaltan, and there were two old houses that were over there too. Do you know any history about them, Kitty?
Well, the only history, I wouldn't know a big pile, but the man is not long buried now, Hughie Gallagher. He has relations in Fulcarra, married here. It was Johnny Sweeney and Hughie Gallagher was the name of the two houses, was over there. And all I ever remembered about them was he used to come down to McDade's there for the van coming there. And they used to get, but they had plenty of money. Now, they were different to us. I don't know where they got their money out of, but they had money. His son then bought a pub in Dunfanaghy. But now, as much as I remembered them well, just coming to McDade's for the, before the van, and my father always saying, you know, they had big notes there to buy their stuff.
And would they have a horse or whatever to carry their stuff for?
They had a wee donkey cart.
Right.
And
there was some distance in the wilderness.
Oh, but did you see? And nobody ever died without a priest in it. This Johnny Gallagher was going to got the hawk to get a priest this night. His wife was having a child. And he went on and he went on and he went on. All the old people was good living at that time. So Johnny was heading for Got the Hawk. And on his way going, he met a priest coming. And he didn't know him. And he said to him, he says, well, I can't believe, he said, who you are. But he says, I'm going to Got the Hawk, he says, for a priest. The priest never spoke. So he went to Got the Hawk anyway to get the priest. His wife was very ill. And the priest landed anyway, and the wife says to Johnny, she said, I had a priest here. That was the priest that the ghost. It was some sort of say that was forecasted there that nobody would ever die without a priest. And I suppose she wasn't going to live maybe till they got the Hawk priest would come. And this was the ghost. He met the priest.
Thank God.
Well, I remembered my father and mother and them. Well, we were out at home there, and there was 10 of a family in it. And there was no hospitals or no nothing at that time. And you jumped on a bicycle there, and maybe else walked it for to go for a doctor. And they were always in time. When you think on the care that they have
now.
Yeah,
I know. So that's the story about the two houses in the wilderness.
Well, that was as much as I would know about them now. So but I know they were Gallagher and Sweeney's.
Gallagher and Sweeney. And there's no road at all into their place?
No road at all, no. Just a pad. It's just a pad that you made with the height force of walking back and forth. Yeah.
Jesus, but quite amazing when you look down where the houses were.
Where they lived. But I don't know where they got their money, but they had money. We had nothing. My father used to be jealous when he would be over there and see this man taking out this Johnny Sweeney. I think his Eddie was his son. That Eddie's still in Dunfanaghy now. I'm not sure now. But yeah, he'd be a dead old man now too. He had son and daughter. But Hughie Gallagher had about 20 wains.
Did he?
He had. And he married a woman from Fulcarra, Hughie. And She was only very, very young. Hughie married her, and Hughie never stayed away from the pub. Drinking. And many a Wayne was born there, and Hughie was never there at the birth of it. And, oh, there must have been 12 or 13 in a family.
Thank God.
There's a lot of them married round Fulcara now, but I wouldn't know any of them.
Oh, I know, you lost touch.
Lost touch.
Titty, you're still going on with your work. You still do bed and breakfast, do you?
I still do bed and breakfast.
You never cease, just...
No. I'll get a phone call. I remember when I got the phone in first, it was up in the upper room, and the phone rang this day. I was nearly feared to lift it. I didn't know what to do. But I picked it up anyway, and there's a voice at the other end said, "Is that you, Kitty?" I says, "It is. This is the centre here. Remember, we stayed with you in such a length of time." She was working in telecom, and she got my number on the...
So she gave you a ring?
Yeah. Aye. So she was married at that time, and she had a child about 3 or 4 weeks old. So she said, "Is there any students there?" I says, "No, they're only having them the first 3 weeks in July now, so they're not doing August. They weren't getting very many." "She'd be all right if we come down for a week." I says, "No problem at all. I'll be delighted to see you." So her and the husband, well, the husband couldn't stand talking about students. The two of them worked in telecom, and she would sit here till the morning, because the first time that she came here, we always called her Cornflakes. For the first time she came here, the bus stopped out there, the Dublin bus stopped out there, and I had a lot of the students in, was like Northern Ireland once, and all that was here, but this Dublin bus got broke down, and they were late in arriving. So these five big girls come off the bus anyway. "Want a room for five people?" Well, I said, "Geez, you're very lucky." I says, "I have a room here for five." So we were always told, we got a note there to tell you what you had to give them when they arrived in first. Didn't matter, should it be only a tomato on the plate, you had to give them a knife and fork. So it was more or less salads that I gave them anyway. But they arrived that night around about 9:30 or 10:00, and 10:00 was the supper. I said, "To hell, I'm not making any difference now. The ones that came in late now can just have their supper just along with the rest of them." So they went in, five of them went into the room anyway, and I called them to come, you know, the supper was ready. And they came out, the five came out, but I knew nothing about any of them. The five of them came out anyway and headed up to the room. And this one that's coming to me, it's only a week ago since she had been here. This one said, "Oh, I'm not unpacking. I'm not staying here. Cornflakes for tea." So I didn't know anything at all about this. So she went into the room. A case was under the bunk, but no, she wouldn't take anything out of it. So anyway, I always had a menu for the breakfast. And I used to get one of the girls, if it was girls I had, boys or whichever, I used to get one of them and give them the book, and they went out and they took number 1, 2, 3, and 4 rooms and put down what they wanted. And their choice was a fry, bacon, egg and sausage, and a scrambled egg or cornflakes. So they had a choice of the three, and whatever was wrote down, I stuck it up just above the range, and I done whatever was wrote down. So they all come out for their breakfast, and whatever they had ordered, it was there. Just lifted their plate off the rack and went to the room. So she came out, and she seemed, well, they had been staying in Fulcara before, and, you know, they never had this. So she says, "Well, that's not too bad." So they went down to the college anyway, and they're all meeting together, and, "What kind of house are you?" And, "Oh, well, it was bad last night. We got cornflakes for tea." But we had a lovely breakfast today. So she decided she would leave it for another day before she would unpack. So things was great. So that same girl is coming to me now for the last 40 years.
And there you go.
And we called her Cornflakes, and we still call her Cornflakes.
So the college students now come, still keep coming here?
No, not Fulcara now at all.
No, but like people who stayed with you, I mean...
Oh, aye, that's the ones that comes to me now.
They keep in touch.
The same as her now. Yeah. Well, even her daughters is coming to me now. And okay. I had a third generation. But just on holidays, you know. But if I hadn't have broke my arm, I would have had a second generation.
You would.
I would. There was a wee photo sitting up there, and this man was here, and he says to me, he said, I know them. They're from Northern Ireland. And I said, how do you know them? Well, he says, I know him. He's at school with me. And they were the name of Michael Boyce. So his father had stayed with me, and then he came back on holidays, and he had a photo of the three wee children with him. So these that would be staying with me then knew their children. So them three wee children, the boy, he was booked to come to me the year I broke my arm. That would be the second generation there. You know, coming on the college.
Very good. Kitty, we've done more than an hour.
You're fed up listening to me.
I am not, no. But no. Sure, I can come back if you think of more.
No, as I said, I could sit here and talk to you now for the rest of my life, because that was the best days of my life.
It was the best days
of my life.
Now you look back and you think, who's staying in your old home now, Kitty?
He's a German.
Right.
He's working over in the crisp factory. And I got him just very funny too. My houses is never empty. They're no sooner somebody come and away, and the next thing there's somebody else looking. And that's the way I've been very, very lucky.
Yeah,
I have great neighbours. All I have to do is press the button and they're with me.
Very good. Kitty, we must leave it there.
Yeah, well, that's grand now. And I'm very thankful now.
I am equally as thankful. So thank you again, Kitty.
For goodness sake. Sure, it was a pleasure to have you. The day's nearly in now.
Good.